everyone. Welcome back to Sit Still, Look Opinionated, a late-night-style comedy and political satire podcast. I'm your host, Claire Malky. That delicious Reese's Take 5 candy bar. Overachieving. So that time is officially upon us. The spook of all spooky, the day of the dead, the scariest night of them all, Halloween! Now, personally, I'm not the biggest fan of scary or gory movies because I'm 99% sure I'm actually haunted, and I also faint at the sight of blood. It's supposed to stay in your body, you know what I mean? I much more prefer the family-friendly genre of Halloween movies, like It's the Great Pumpkin Charlie Brown, or Twitches, or Halloween Town, or Halloween Town 2, Calabar's Revenge, or even Halloween Town High. All great movies, and now available on Disney Plus. Not sponsored, by the way. Although I will say that everything that happens in the OG Halloween Town is 100% Marnie's fault. Like, go back and watch the movie through that lens and you'll realize it was all because of Marnie. But now to actually scare you, let's talk about some upcoming elections. If you don't know, I'm originally from Virginia, and in just a few days, on November 2nd, Virginia will elect a new governor, either Democrat Terry McAuliffe or Republican Glenn Youngkin. The ballot also includes elections for lieutenant governor and attorney general. Now, usually the nation doesn't key into state and local elections, but it's so important to stay politically engaged during these off years because actual modifications to our government are made at the state and local level. I know I totally sound like a broken record, but change starts in the community. If you want to learn more about community engagement, you can check out episode 2 from this season, Activists at Sunrise, or episode 4 on Off Your Elections. Or you can check out Season 3, Episode 6 on local politics, or Season 3, Episode 9 on local journalism. And Season 2 has a shit ton of info on voting in general, so you can take your pick. Can you tell this stuff matters to us? Because Virginia is so close to D.C., the Virginia governor's race is also a microcosm of the national political landscape. Many of the issues being brought to the forefront of this race are also national issues, like mask mandates, abortion access, education reform, rebuilding the economy, and implementing Pizza Fridays. Okay, yeah, that last one isn't real, but wouldn't it be nice to always have a slice of cheese ready for you at the end of the week? If you want to actually learn about the upcoming elections, you can check out elections.virginia.gov or votesaveamerica.com/state/Virginia. And Ballotopedia has a ton of great resources on all the candidates. And don't worry, Chicago residents, we have our own election coming up next summer. I probably won't be able to shut up about it, so you'll know when it's happening. We've got an extra spooky show for you all today. We have Nathan Shelton and Andy McMurtry from Frightmare Theater Podcast in the studio with us today. Stick around for an extra terrifying interview. Right now, I'm drinking a Witch's Brew cocktail out of a cauldron mug. Grab your drink and let's get started. Up next, this week's headlines. Trump's new social media platform is set to start a streaming service that features non-woke programs, making it the first streaming service to exclusively have programs from before in 1999. The FDA authorized that Americans can receive a booster shot with a different vaccine than their original dose. Perfect! That means Pfizer before beer, you're in the clear. Moderna before liquor, you won't get sicker. Democrats are trying to cut the price of the family policy plan in order to win the moderate vote. You know what they say? Everything in moderation, including access to early childhood education. Japan's princess has married her college sweetheart and commoner, thus losing her royal status. She obviously didn't read the prenup. Facebook has posted better-than-expected earnings, even as it continues to face bad press. Facebook couldn't be more successful if it was a straight white guy in his 20s with a history of harassment. pediatric doctors are preparing for a U.S. government plan to get 28 million children a COVID jab. Depending on regional dialect, parents might think they're sending their kids off to work.
Hey, kid, I got a jab for you.
Astronomers have found hints of what could be the first planet ever to be discovered outside our galaxy. And yep, they already have racism. A shooting at a mall in Boise, Idaho, left 2 people dead and 5 people injured. It would have been more, but luckily people don't go to malls anymore. A group of scientists in Singapore are attempting to use Legos to rebuild coral reefs. Because if there's one thing the oceans need, it's more plastic. Some African elephants have evolved to be tuskless in response to poaching. To get poached eggs out of simmering water, some elephants have evolved to grow slotted spoons. Mitt Romney said that if a wealth tax passes Congress, the wealthy will resort to buying art. Wait, so what's the threat here? If we start taxing the rich, they'll start paying artists? Astronomers have found the first exoplanet candidate outside the Milky Way galaxy. For the sake of comedy, NASA, please call it Uranus 2. Over the past year, governments largely focused on reviving the traditional fossil fuel-dependent parts of their economies. Basically, treating Earth like roulette. And betting it all on black, baby. In every region of the U.S., the number of COVID cases has dropped. Except Texas, where the only thing that's dropped is the number of rights women have. And that was this week's headlines.
Bless me, Father, for I have sinned.
Really, Maggie? It's barely been 24 hours. I can't imagine what would have happened in that time that's any worse than yesterday, really. Calling yourself a whore of Babylon for licking an ice cream cone. But all right, it's my job, so shoot.
Well, Father, I think I killed someone. In addition to eating saltwater taffy at the park this afternoon.
What? You ate saltwater taffy?
Yes, Father. But the murder?
But you ate saltwater taffy.
Wait, what?
Oh, I was this close to make it in a month without them showing up. Let's get back to the taffy. The devil loves saltwater taffy.
Who's them?
Ah, that would be me.
Oh, Lord, not again.
Father Goff, always a pleasure.
How much taffy did you eat, child? Oh, it doesn't matter. The devil has come no matter how much taffy you eat. My God in heaven, save us from the devil's taffy.
But Father, am I going to spend eternity in hell for the murder?
I don't care about murder anymore.
Just like I don't care about gender norms. No, I'm here for the taffy. You ready to go?
To hell?
Why, yes, you did eat the taffy, didn't you? Don't lie, because I'll know! No, but seriously, get downstairs.
What? All from eating a bit of taffy? Why taffy?
Saltwater taffy is the gateway to sin, my child. It's sticky and just gets everywhere. Just like me, ever since Judas betrayed Jesus by eating his sacred taffy.
Really? But I thought he...
It was the taffy!
Come, child.
Another follower of Christ, laid low by Satan's salty treats. Here's hoping I don't see that devil may not care for a good long while.
Bless me, Father, for I have sinned. I've been meaning to tell someone this for a while now, but I'm the Zodiac Killer. And this afternoon, when I was sitting in a quiet movie theater, I opened a butterscotch wrapper and, well...
Did you say butterscotch?
Our story begins on a night not too dissimilar from a typical October night. Crisp air, fallen leaves, and a bunch of millennials actively staying home to avoid being social. One could say that this kind of a night was a standard night for 29-year-old Susie McLaren. The type of early Wednesday evening that Susie looked forward to for a little Netflix and chill. Except tonight, her show of choice was on Hulu. Susie often liked to couple her viewing experience with a nice, healthy snack. Sometimes it was hummus, sometimes it was carrots. But tonight she decided to choose popcorn. A decision that would forever alter the rest of her week. About two handfuls in, a rogue kernel managed to lodge itself in between the first and second maxillary molars. She tongued at the kernel, but it was wedged tight. She picked at it, but her stubby fingers couldn't reach it. She looked back at the TV. She had just missed a pivotal plot point. Her show had now become unwatchable. This was going to require precision tools. She grabbed her toothbrush, but the bristles bounced off her teeth like bullets off something that was bulletproof. Finally, she resigned to use something she only kept around for appearances. Floss. Susie pulled out an excessive amount, one fit for the job at hand. She coiled it in her fingers and pressed down. As fate would have it, Susie was so out of practice with the floss, she not only failed to remove the kernel, but instead, drove it further into its crevice. She had now spent an hour trying to evict this kernel. It had now become clear what it was she would have to do. She was going to have to call a dentist. Susie had recalled that she had just been to a party where a friend had recommended their new dentist, which led her to realize that she was about to turn 30. And the topic of conversations at parties were now about primary care providers. The next morning, Susie found her skin sticking to the cheap plastic that coated the dentist armchair. The air was cold. The ceiling was stained. The floor was carpeted. Susie's heart rate was racing. This was a mistake, she thought. She had to get out of there. She scrambled to separate herself from the seat. She ripped her chest napkin and flung it to the side. She grabbed her bag and turned to find the dentist, watching from the doorway. A tall, thin-lipped woman whose skin was as pale as the lights were fluorescent. Susie had failed to escape. It had now found herself facing the thing she feared most. Judgment. Susie sunk back into her chair and opened wide. Her verdict was issued shortly after.
It looks like you are going to need a root canal.
Clutching her jaw, she walked to the receptionist. She saw the light at the end of the tunnel. That is, until the receptionist informed her, they didn't take Susie's insurance. So if you find yourself in a situation like Susie's, run. Run as fast as you can, and only go to doctors listed in your network. Because if you don't, you may find yourself in the adulthood zone.
Great news, everyone! We have new staff writers this season. We were able to hire them through your support from Patreon. To keep our writers on our team, please consider subscribing to our Patreon. Thanks so much to our patrons Sam, Laura, Andy, Christina, Anthony, and Anna. Hope to add your name next week. For more information, find us at patreon.com/sitstillpodcast. Up next, we have my interview with Nathan Shelton and Andy McMurtry from Frightmare Theater Podcast. For today's interview, we have Nathan Shelton and Andrew McMurtry from Frightmare Theater Podcast. Nathan is a professional stage and screen actor, writer and director, and monster maker based in Chicago. He's the founder and executive producer of Arcane, a cabal of like-minded creatives who share a passion for all things dark, twisted, and mysterious. And we also have Andrew, who is an actor and writer from Springfield, Missouri. Thank you so much for being on Sit Still, Look Opinionated.
Thanks for having us.
Thank you.
I am very excited. This is our Halloween episode. You know, things are getting spooky. They're getting a little colder.
That's our favorite time of year.
I'm so excited. So even though I did introduce both of you, Nathan, would you mind giving us a little bit about your background, who you are? And then Andrew, we'll go to you next.
Sure. I'm a transplant to Chicago from Springfield, Missouri, originally, which is where Andy is now. And we actually went to college together, and I was a theater major in college, but I've always grown up with a penchant for horror. My dad was a huge horror buff, so he got me into horror, and I kind of grew up watching the Universal horror films all the way up, you know, through the years into a variety of different subgenres. And when it came to starting to do my own work as an artist myself, I'm always drawn to that kind of dark, creepy, mysterious. I like you said, I'm a monster maker. I've done a lot of special effects for film and for stage and continue to do that. I've recently been moving more into like mask making and things like that, large scale puppetry. So
that's awesome.
It's a lot of fun. I try to stay creative. And one of our endeavors is the Frightmare Theater Podcast, where Andy and I are both working. Andy's one of the producers with my company, Arcane. So sorry, Andy, I just transitioned into you.
Oh, sorry. Well, sorry, my glasses are missing a earpiece, so that's why it looks strange. But I'm Andrew McMurtry, and yeah, I'm from Springfield, Missouri, and Nathan and I went to college together, but we didn't really know each other that well until a little bit afterwards.
Yeah, we orbited each other, I guess.
Yeah. And so while he was
both
in Chicago,
the theater department.
Right. And while I was in Chicago, I was most appropriate thing that I was working on to what we're talking about today is a local horror host television show called The New Uncle Gregory Horror Hour. And I played the horror host Uncle Gregory. And so it's kind of like the old shows like Vampira from the 50s and 60s and 70s that were staples of late television broadcasting, where they would have be a host and he would host really bad movies, and so black and white films, Carnival of Souls, Night of the Living Dead. For us, they had to be public domain so that we didn't have to pay anything. So it was a very cheaply produced series. But then after that ended, Nathan contacted me, and so that was one of the reasons I wanted to get on board with the Frightmare Theater, which is in a very similar vein.
Yeah. And could you all talk a little bit about what Frightmare Theater is and how you got started with that podcast?
Sure. Well, it kind of was born out of the theater. Andy and I were both theater majors, and I do a lot of producing, especially back in Missouri. I kind of live in two states, Missouri and then Illinois, because I'm bopping back and forth from my hometown and then Chicago all the time. And we were working on a production of The Elephant Man, actually, Andy and I were. And I got this notion I really wanted to do a web series. And so we had started to formulate with some of our longtime collaborators that we've produced a lot of theater together, and then some new people, this idea that we could create a horror web series. We didn't know if it was going to be an anthology series or what we were going to do with it. And we started developing it. We had a writer's team that met at my house every week, and we were kind of developing this. And as we began really looking at it, it was like, well, damn it, this is going to be very expensive. Mm-hmm. And we don't know if we're going to be able to keep this thing sustainable. But one thing that like Andy and myself and a few other of our members really, really, really loved are these old radio shows. You know, there's some really amazing old radio theater shows, Lights Out, things like that, that Inner Sanctum, you know, and they were always so fun. And one of the goals of Arcane, our production company, is to really push audiences to have a more immersive experience with the media that they're consuming. Mm-hmm. Because I think too much, there's too much passivity in our world today.
Yeah.
And there's, especially as an audience, we go and we watch movies, we eat the popcorn, you know, the best way to watch movies in the theater, because you can kind of be with it, right? Mm-hmm. But then how often do we do that? Well, not very often anymore. We're at home, we're on our phones, we pause the movie to get up, we, you know, we're talking to people, we're, you know, everything but just giving your full attention to the art that you're consuming. Mm-hmm. And I've always tried with my productions, our productions, to really push that envelope and really try to get the audience engaged. Our first big endeavor was a web series called Shadowbound, which was a silent horror, black and white Lovecraftian horror series, five parts. And yeah, it's a very niche audience, right? But like, if you look at our first episode, we have all these views, and then it drastically drops by episode two, because it's not for everybody. Not everybody mm-hmm. wants to be that immersive, but it forced you to really pay attention, right? Because you can't hear them talking. You're reading and you're watching and you're listening. We had great score for that. And, you know, it was immersive. And I think that the people who dug it really, really dug it, because they could get immersed in it. So for this next big project that we started working on, we were like, well, what if we pivot the idea of a web series into a, you know, an anthology radio show, but we want to incorporate things that we love from our childhood, like horror hosts, you know, like Tales from the Crypt, things like that. So like television horror anthology series mixed with the horror host idea, blended together in this old radio drama that's brought into our century. So we have highly produced episodes. It's like a movie, a horror movie for your ears. We really, like we were talking before we started recording about you listening to an episode.
Yes. Listeners, yeah, I would say if you listen to these episodes, put your AirPods in, put your Beats or whatever, anything that has, you know, really good surround sound. Because I truly thought someone was in my apartment when I was listening to it. So it was.
We work really hard on that. Yeah,
Nathan does a lot of the editing and sound editing and doing all of that work, and that is very much appreciated. And I think that's definitely what sets it apart from other podcasts. And exactly what he's saying is that it's. To really fully enjoy it, it's for someone who's able to put in the time and the patience to listen to it from beginning to end, because we are trying to replicate that feeling of tuning in to a nightly broadcast radio show, and you're having a one-on-one communication with the program and yourself as the listener. And again, I'll equate it to the television show I did. We have it on YouTube, but we kept trying to push it to have people watch it on live on television, because that's really the best mood to see it in, you know, right. Staying up late past your bedtime, you're watching something yes. very specific, and maybe not everybody knows about this. It's something more intimate.
Right. When you know, our motto for Frightmare Theater is it's time to turn down the lights and turn up the terror, because we're trying to clue the audience in on how we want you to listen to our show, how you're going to get the best audience experience. It's by really getting rid of the distractions and being with the media that you're wanting to consume. It's not something you want to do while you're working or anything like that. You can enjoy it on that level, but you're only going to get that surface level entertainment. But you can have those episodes really affect you. There's some episodes that really affect me, and I edited all of them. Like, Annie wrote one called, yeah, I know it's coming, but there's one that while I was editing it, it's a two-parter for our Halloween episode. We had a horror comedy that I wrote, Dark and Stormy Night, and then we had this really disturbing 1950s like weird piece that Andy wrote, and it's called Fire Lawn. That is still the most disturbing episode to me, and I've only gone back and listened to it once, because it's really kind of dark and a little depressing, but it's great. I appreciate anything that can affect me on that level. And so I love working with these people. We have a great team of writers, and they're all great directors too. And we're all actors. So we all act in each other's things. We bring in our actor friends. We have writers from all over the US. We have a writer in Los Angeles. We have a writer in New York. We have writers here in Chicago. Fee Bassanavicius is one of our writers. And then we have writers
all
in
all original content. Yeah.
All original or adapted. I mean, you did a great adaptation of The Wendigo.
From, again, a piece that would be in the public domain and free to adapt.
Yeah.
Can you all talk a little bit about what that's like developing a horror piece or a spooky piece? How is that maybe different from writing like sketch comedy, for example?
I've often compared comedy to horror in many ways. A lot of us are comedians too, not like stand-up comics, but we're comedic actors. We do a lot of comedy. Andy and I both have done a lot of comedy, a lot of physical comedy on the stage, and a lot of comedic roles in film and stuff too. It's comedy is all about timing and understanding the timing. And there's the timing in the writing, and it's something you can't always teach. You can kind of develop that inner clock, but I think it's something you have to kind of develop yourself. I don't think it's something like I couldn't take comedy and then tell somebody how to do it. And then there's so many different rhythms that people have. Some comedy works really well for other people and it doesn't for others, just like horror. Sometimes certain genres really resonate with people. Certain tones really resonate. And that's one of the things that I love about working on this show is we've drawn people together that are from different backgrounds, different walks of life, and they can bring their unique rhythms, their unique tones to the piece. And so when you're developing that, it's all about the building of tension and the release of tension. And sometimes people release tension when, in the most bizarre of ways. It's not always, screaming. Sometimes when you're terrified, you just start laughing uncontrollably. Sometimes when you're super sad, the same thing. You never know how the body's going to react. But building the right tension and keeping that flow going, I think, is a skill. And that's something that we're all working towards, because none of us had written for radio before the show. Some of us were playwrights. Some of us were film writers. Some of us were sketch writers. Some of us, one of us was a novelist. It's like we've all come from these different backgrounds, and really it's great for us. We're growing as artists, being able to take all those ideas that we typically have visually, right? Because we're a visual society. We're a visual culture today. Taking those, compressing those, and putting them back, like almost going back in time, but it's not really, because we're doing it differently for today's audiences. And what would be scary today? How can we affect mood and people's sense of I guess entertainment today and with today's audience? And so I don't know, Andy, do you see a correlation between that, between comedy and horror?
So the building of a scream and then the release of the scream, you have to have something to release it so you're
not
able
just
to,
jump
to draw your breath.
Not just jump scares.
Right. And again, like what you were saying about us having to scale back the original idea of doing like a web series to a radio show. Yeah, it's because it's cheaper. You don't have to focus on the visual cinematography, video equipment. You're just using audio. And so that really is the main difficulty that a lot of us have found, is trying to translate something that we see in our head and, you know, visually, like a sketch on stage or in movies, and use the sound effect to relay something visually, instead, since we can't actually see it. And then sometimes we can't even do it that way, so we have to find another way to try and make this this moment that's either scary or funny to work. And yeah, a lot of the stories that we have aren't necessarily like scary. They some of them are very kooky.
Some of them are hilarious. Hilarious. And we've got, Fee has written some very funny episodes for us. And Spencer wrote a really hilarious episode too, the science fiction episode.
Which reminds me that the introductory and outro segments
Are
also
right.
part of the show.
They are. Yeah, that's one of the things we do that does separate us from other podcasts like this too. It's not just an encompassed, you know, just the audio drama. We have these weird characters that exist within the Frightmare Theater world. Dr. Necropolis, the host, who I voice, the announcer, who Andy voices, Al in the booth, who's the station manager and also happens to be a werewolf, Greg, the hunchback handyman, and Agnes, the music director of the show, who's like some undead Bride of Frankenstein-esque thing. And they all fight and talk, and they have their own bits as a wraparound segment. So it's like the Crypt Keeper, you know, you have some jokes in the beginning, then you go into what could be a very dark and disturbing episode, and then you come back and comment on it. And it allows the audience to also take that kind of sigh of relief and breathe and go, it's just a show, you know, it's mm-hmm. okay. We can go on.
So if you don't like the story that we're telling that episode, then there's at least the segments with the familiar characters.
Right.
We'll
we
throw
want
you
the
a
audience
bone there.
To follow. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
I really love that world building of, you know, building the all these characters, and it's more than just like listening to a book, I guess. It's very much like all these characters are helping you interact with the story, and again, like immersing that media in a different way. So I think that is something really special that does set you all apart. How is your like recording process? Like, do you all sometimes like get scared while you're recording or while you're working on it? Or is it more like you kind of know what's coming type thing?
I think that there are some people amongst us that, are really like fraidy cats. Andy and I, you know, we're such horror, like just psycho horror fans. I think we try to be as terrifying as possible and really get the emotion and the immediacy in the recordings. You know, I remember when we first started, I built a makeshift booth in my garage back in Missouri because I was back there running a theater company for a bit. Andy, this thing was super hot. It was in the summertime in Missouri, in Southwest Missouri. So it was like it was basically a torture. You know, we would get in trouble like for war crimes if anybody knew what we were putting people through. It was a hot box. So we had these microphones set up in this makeshift booth lined with old carpet that I got from somebody who was throwing it out. So the carpet was dusty and gross, but it's all I had.
And but it sounded great.
It did. You know, but Andy was on the microphone, the very first mic we got, and he's playing this thing in an episode that that's in our first season called From the Drain, which is, I love this episode. And part of the reason I love the episode so much is because of Andy's performance. He's in this, and he wanted to sound like this gurgling creature from the drain. So he kept putting water in his mouth so that when he talked, he was like, you know, and he would get all up on the microphone and just listening to it. It's really terrifying because he's also got this, you know, amazing Barry White-esque low voice, you know, that.
But the thing that
loves.
I put into that performance really was that I also found a can of almonds in Nathan's kitchen, and I started to chew those into the microphone too while I was speaking, hoping that it would sound like chewed bones. And then when I asked Nathan after he'd listened to the takes if he liked that, he said, oh, I didn't know. I couldn't tell. So I was choking on water and sharp almond shards. for this performance.
I just thought you were really good at
translate
vocal effects. I didn't know. But we've always had a good time. We nowadays in this post-COVID world, and also because we're all over the you know, we've spread out. I'm back here in Chicago, and you know, we've got some of us here, some of us there, and it's a lot of our stuff is recorded in our home, you know, in our home areas, Andy's got the, you know, one of our mics there. So he has people come over and do it if they don't have their own equipment. But a lot of us over the last couple of years have gotten our own equipment, you know.
Yeah.
I have a home studio here in Chicago. So we have a lot of actors. When Fee and I are writing things, we use a lot of our friends here in Chicago. And so they come over here and record in the Arcane studio here. And I've got somebody coming over tomorrow actually to record. And so it's fun. And then we just put it all together, but it is difficult because we don't have that old theatrical, like back in the old days where you're recording everybody together in a big room with all these microphones and a live Foley artist and stuff like that.
Yeah.
We don't do that, but we really want it to be a little bit more, I hate the term realistic, but a little bit more realistic for our audience. We really want to immerse them. So our sound effects, they're not like live sound effects. You know, we find them, edit them, and tweak them and create layers upon layers of sounds. And we have an amazing composing team. That I believe they're in Oklahoma now, but they were also in Missouri for a while. And Chris is just an amazing composer, and his girlfriend, Allison, they do all of the music for us now. And like every episode, they created our theme and everything. So I send off our edits to him and give him a few notes, and he just gets it. And he gets the tone of every episode, which is all different because different writers, different directors, you know, every episode has a different feel. He just gets it. And it comes back to us.
That would be a lot to keep up on.
It is. It's such a weird multi-level process to produce this show. There's so many different things that have to happen to get it to first the writing and then the recording, you know, and then all that.
And
you were talking a little, Nathan was talking a few days ago. He's been mentioning it quite often about trying to do live shows with some of our scripts. And so having somebody on stage with a live audience, doing the sound effects, and we're standing in front of microphones like an actual radio production. So I think that would be very neat to have a special performance around Halloween.
That's the future. That's what I want. Yeah. I really, now that the world's starting to open back up a little bit, I really want us to move into going to cons and festivals, doing live shows, doing special events, even here in Chicago, just maybe even renting out a little space and doing a live show. It's a dream and a goal of mine. I really would love, I think that people would love to, I would have loved it to experience sitting in the audience of a really awesome horror radio show that has a little bit more of theatricality. I'm seeing something with multimedia and all sorts of stuff. So
there's definitely tons of opportunities for that. And live, there's nothing like being live. I saw a friend's dance concert recently, and I was just in awe, just watching live dance, and same sort of thing. Like anything live is just magical.
Right. And part of the reason it's magical, I think, is because you're there. You're there. You're immersed in it. You can't get away. You can't look at your phone. You can't be talking to a friend. You are there with the media that you are consuming, with the performance that you're consuming. And that is so vitally important. And that's why, you know, that's what we try to do with our show. And I'm glad I think it's working. I think it's working.
So you both are horror writers and obviously perform in the podcast as you've been mentioning. Have you all ever had extraterrestrial encounter or anything sort of like spooky happen in your actual lives?
Oh yes. Andy, have you? I don't know. I don't know if you've ever mentioned anything like this.
Well, in Springfield, in Missouri, at least, you might know of it. It's become kind of more well-known. There's the Joplin spook light. And Joplin's maybe a couple hours away from here, but it's an hour?
Like 45 minutes an
hour. Okay, whatever. And anyways, this has been going on for at least 100 years or more, and people will go sit at night on this drive, this country road, and there have been this little flickering, flashing light off in the distance of this road that always appears, but it never seems to go anywhere. So it's not headlights. And people think that it used to be blamed on swamp gas, but I don't think there are any swamps there.
I thought that it moved. It doesn't move?
Well, some people say that it does, but my experience was that I kept waiting for this thing to happen, and I didn't look at any videos on YouTube beforehand to know what to look for, but I went with somebody that had gone before, and so she had said that she'd gone with her grandmother and some of her cousins, and this thing, this ball of light floated in the ditch and along the car, so I wasn't expecting anything like that, and it didn't happen. That didn't happen, but off in the distance of this old country road was this flickering light, and it never got any closer, and it just kind of disappeared. And we took note of that. But then with that night when I got home, I thought, okay, I'm going to look, see what this is supposed to look like. Mm-hmm. And all the videos were exactly like what I had seen. This flickering light that people think is a headlight, and it never gets any closer. And so apparently I did see what a lot of people have seen or blame this spook light on. But apparently other people's experiences are some kind of, I don't know.
I've heard that it moves and that it will come and hover over car engine, like over the hood of a car sometimes. I mean, there's been all sorts of reports, and there's been lots of pictures and videos and stuff.
But even if you don't see it, it's just kind of fun to drive to this place and sit there waiting at night. Although I have been told that it's best to go in when there are no leaves on the trees, because the leaves will obscure the view. Oh. So if you go in sometime in late fall or winter, that's the best time to try and see that thing. So that's the only supernatural thing that I've ever experienced that I can think of.
Was it like scared? Like, were you really scared at all by that? Or was it more sort of like, oh, I see what they're talking about?
I was more scared about a police officer pulling up and saying, hey, you got to get out here. I think that they've started to crack down on people just parking their cars along this country road because there are people that live there now.
Mm-hmm. It's like what they did with
and then also having my car windows rolled down in the middle of the night and hearing crickets and wondering if somebody's going to like walk up to the side of my open car window. That was a little eerie. Nathan?
Oh yeah.
Yeah, Nathan, what's your experience?
Well, okay, so one of my favorite more recent experiences, we were shooting Shadowbound, actually, that web series I was telling you about, which takes place in 1929. So we had to get all these old locations, right? We had to get all these old locations, and we all had to be in old-timey clothes, you know? And we went out to this place in Springfield that's called the Pythian Castle. The Pythian Castle is it's been an asylum, I think. It's been an asylum. It's been an orphanage. It's been a war, like a military outpost. And I think that they even held prisoners. They did hold prisoners in the basement.
It was an asylum?
It was a hospital.
A medical hospital?
Yeah, it was a medical hospital for a while. And then it was an orphanage
for a while. Like an American Horror Story type thing?
Kind of.
It was
kind of.
Everything.
It's a beautiful old house.
It's built on an Indian burial ground.
right, yeah.
Poltergeist.
It's been cursed. It's got a gateway to another world. No, it's a really beautiful old house, and we had to have it for our, you know, I basically wrote the web series with it in mind as this ancestral home of the main character. So for exteriors, we used it. And then we used the basement for the asylum in our movie, because there's all these gated doors and things down there. It's really creepy. Well, we were shooting, we got permission to go out there, and they were great to work with. And we shot with them, I think 2 days, but really heavily on one day. And I was down scouting down in the basement, in the boiler room. Mm-hmm. And what we got this location because one of my actors I don't want to give anything away, but he plays a character in the web series. He used to give the ghost tours at this place. Ooh. So he knew all the history and stuff. And I'd never taken one of his ghost tours. I still have yet to take one. I feel like a jerk, but he doesn't do them anymore. But he was like, yeah, I'll talk to them and we'll get you guys in. So he helped us get the location, which I was eternally grateful. for. And so we'd all heard that this place was haunted. You don't know if any of that stuff is real or not real. I believe in it, but I didn't know if it really was haunted. I'd never seen anything there. You know, I'd been in there a few times, and I've heard things that have happened on his tours. I'll tell you one in just a second because it's pretty short. But while we were shooting, me, my cinematographer, and a PA were mm-hmm. down in this tunnel. There's like a, right next to the boiler room, there's this really short, you have to crouch to get into it. And it's like this access tunnel, and it has these like bulbs ever so often down the line, you know? Kind of like the movie Session 9, if anybody has ever seen that movie. It's a terrifying movie set in a real asylum too, in the Danvers Asylum. Anyway, we were down there shooting, we were down there like looking, and he had the camera, and I see this guy in a brown suit at the edge of the tunnel, and he's looking at us, and he just goes like, and he walks to the right, and I'm like, well, he doesn't look very happy. And I looked back at Dan, my cinematographer, and he was like, what are you talking about? And I'm like, did you see that guy in the brown suit over there? He looked pissed. And I'm like, I didn't think anybody else was supposed to be here today. It was just supposed to be our crew. You know, they were kind of closed. They weren't doing any events. And he was like, yeah, they are. So I'm like, well, I want to find out what he's doing. So we walk down to the end of the tunnel, and we turn where the guy turned, and there's a brick wall there. There is nothing there. There is nothing. And the guy wasn't see-through.
Oh my
gosh. He wasn't some sort of glowing apparition. He was a man in a brown suit that looked very angry with us and like did a, oh, fooey kind of hand motion to us. And
gosh.
You know, like, and I did, and he didn't look like he was from the past. He didn't look in like anything. He just looked like a person. But it is physically impossible because the end of the tunnel is completely walled off. There is nowhere to go. It's literally a secret passage. There's nothing. And I looked at Dan and I was like, well, I don't, maybe I know I saw a guy, like, why would I bring it up to him? You know, I thought we were going to get in trouble. That's the thing. I thought we were going to get in trouble. And I'm like, what the hell is this? So Dan's getting real creeped out. And the PA just booked up running, just left. And we were like, okay, we're going to get out of here. So I tell Tim, the guy that got us the place that used to do those ghost tours, we were in there doing we had our premiere event there. We invited people out to do the premiere event. And while we were setting everything up, he was doing a ghost tour. And I told him, hey, you know, is there a guy that works here that has a brown suit? And he was like, what are you talking about? And I was like, there was a guy down in the tunnel. He was like, you were in the tunnel and you saw a man in a brown suit. And I was like, yeah, yeah. He was like, did the brown suit? And he described this brown suit to me. And I'm like, yeah, that's the guy I saw. And he was like, you're not the only person that has seen that man.
Oh my God.
And he's a very violent apparition, apparently. And he said that where the guy went, where I turned, there's actually a staircase behind that wall that was walled off. It used to go up to the army barracks that's just across the lawn. And there is a staircase, like a little tunnel staircase thing that goes up there.
Oh my gosh.
And it was walled off a long time ago because I guess it had fallen into disrepair, and they are two separate facilities now. The army no longer owns the Pythian Castle. And so because of that, but it used to be there. So that's where the guy turned. And I didn't know any of this when I saw the guy. I didn't know any of this. And I was shocked afterwards. I'm like, I guess I saw a ghost and I didn't even know it, you know? And yeah. And then, so that night, that's my personal story, but that night Tim's doing a ghost tour while we're getting, you know, having the audio, getting everything set up for our premiere event of the first two episodes. And he's giving a ghost tour, and he always does a EVP, you know, the audio recordings.
Electronic
for spiritual
voice
phenomenon.
Oh.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So he's doing EVP recordings. They always do that. And they were down in that tunnel and somebody got scratched. Like they screamed and they went upstairs and they had a deep scratch on their arm or their shoulder, something. And they caught an EVP that nobody heard down there. And I will replicate it right now because it is terrifying. It's this weird androgynous. It's this weird androgynous voice that says, I've got you now.
Oh my gosh.
It's so scary. He came up and he was so excited that he caught it because they were just listening back and he's like, oh my God, did you hear this? Did you hear this? And he played it for us and it's very clearly says, I've got you now. Very scary.
That is,
isn't it?
Yeah.
That's so
terrifying. And nobody heard it down there. Nobody heard it down there. Nobody said it. It wasn't, you know, it wasn't anything. There was, you know, they could only take so many people down that tunnel at a time because it's so
small.
Do
they have like a website where you can listen to things or?
If you, I don't, I'm sure they do. I know if you ask Tim, he'll play that for you.
I think that one of the ghost adventures was here a few years ago. And
they
I think
did something
they
there too.
Did a tour there.
They did a show.
I have you now. Isn't that what every like villain says as he has like the hero in his sights with a gun? I have you now. Oh, it's Darth Vader. That's what he says, right?
I don't think Darth Vader says
that. I have you now.
Is that your Darth Vader voice?
So we do have a signature final question here on Sit Still, Look Opinionated, and it is, what is something you are opinionated about? And this can be about anything. Andrew, want to tell us what you are opinionated about?
Well, I think Nathan and I were trying to communicate to one another what's something we could even talk about. Like, well, what are you going to talk about that's opinionated? I don't know. What are you going to talk about? So I think we were kind of both in agreement that we'd probably just stick to, you know, something that we're opinionated about is movies in general, good versus bad movies. But if there are a lot of horror people listening right now, they might be interested in our anger and frustration with the Shining movie. I don't know if we were trying to save this for our graveside chat, which is a side project for Patreon supporters. I don't know if
you are opening up a can of worms here, but we are both very opinionated about that movie. I'm sorry, but we really are. Everybody loves The Shining.
Apparently
everybody loves it.
The minority with it, but it's just not it's not one of the scariest movies.
And it's not just not scary. It's just not that great of a movie. It's visually stunning because Kubrick is a stunning director. But as far as the performances go, I mean, I think that they're all amazing actors. I should say, I guess it's the writing and the directing that I really have a problem with because there's no arc to any of them.
No.
It's Jack Nicholson's crazy from the get-go.
Nathan's a big Stephen King fan. So his
huge,
you know, frustration would be more than mine. So he has read the book. I have not.
Yeah,
and
multiple
you're,
times.
You're
and
an
that
admirer
movie is
of
not
the TV
book.
Movie or miniseries that was in the 90s, which I don't remember very much.
I love
about.
It. I love it.
My thing with The Shining is I've seen it a couple of times, but I just, from what I've heard, is that he didn't treat the main actress very well. And she, like, actually, like, went crazy, is, like, at least what I've heard. And I'm like,
yeah.
Well, she did. Not cool.
Yes, you are correct. She did have a mental breakdown. I don't necessarily know if that mental breakdown had just to do with the way Kubrick treated her on that movie, because I think it actually happened much later in life. But I do know that it was psychologically distressing to her. And he was, I don't approve of any, I mean, Hitchcock was notorious for treating his actors and actresses, but mainly his actresses very, very poorly. And of course, I don't approve of that at all. But also, it made her the worst incarnation of that character that could possibly be. That character in the book is a very strong woman, a very strong-willed person who fights like hell for her son, fights against Jack, and has a lot of three dimension. And I don't think that any of the characters in that movie have any three dimension except for Scatman Crothers' character, the cook. He's the only one that is like even remotely close to how he's written in the book.
And that's my complaint with it, is that they're all crazy from the beginning to the end. There's no change in them.
She's
not even the little
down.
Boy.
Right. And she's beaten down from the very get-go. She's like very meek and timid and like beaten down by Jack, who obviously is a psychopath right off the bat. You know, he's
so if you're watching it as a movie that's more like trying to, you know, put you in a certain mood, or, you know, it's trying to make you put you at unease, then sure, that probably works. But for it to be a movie that you are relating to actual people that are on the screen, there's nobody that you relate to. And so therefore I
it's
don't
cold.
Care about them. And so I'm not afraid for them.
It's a cold movie with no warmth to the people. And so you were right, Andy, you cannot identify with them. And because you cannot identify with them, you really don't care what happens to them. And that is what I believe true horror is the idea that in a world where something like this could happen, if you could survive, would you even want to? Because it's so horrifying, you know? And I just think he missed the mark on that because the characters are so rich and so beautiful and so complex. Even the dad character, you know, who's a huge part of the book, like basically pretty much the main character, you know, and his arc and him, Wendy, and Danny are all three the main characters. And it's just, yeah, it's such a travesty, that movie. I can't get over it. Maybe if I didn't read the book, I would really like it because it has some great visuals. It's got some great spooky stuff.
Yeah.
But everybody just like puts that as the epitome of all horror. And Andy and I are both like, we want to do a trial of that movie and have people that are for it and us that are against it and hold it a trial and see who wins.
Yeah.
That might be fun for Patreon. But no, I kind of agree because I don't really like scary stuff because I am like very afraid. Also, my grandmother is 100% a witch, tells me every single time I see her that there's a ghost with me. So, you know.
Well, you have a palmistry poster on your wall back there. So
yeah.
I was wondering if there was some fascination with that.
Yeah, I'm very much into the idea of like I guess it kind of falls under like woo, but sort of like free will
esoteric
versus
spirituality.
Yeah, like free will versus like destiny, I guess. And so I always kind of am wondering how those two things are connected. I watched The Shining with friends a few years ago, and I'm scared, and I wasn't even really that freaked out by like even the bathtub thing, just because I think what you were saying, Nathan, like if you're not scared for the characters, then you're not as like, yeah, I didn't feel that connection to them. And I was like, I also don't think this would ever happen to me because I'm never going to go to a weird, creepy hotel in Colorado or wherever it is. But
you never know.
Yeah,
maybe you'll book a gig there or something, and then you wind up having to go.
That's true. That is true. But yeah, I'm always like interested in like the unseen, but then I'm like, I think I actually might be haunted in real life, so I don't really.
You don't need to live it in your movie watching experience.
Yeah, exactly. Well, Nathan and Andrew, thank you so much for sharing those stories. And thank you so much for being guests on Sit Still, Look Opinionated. If our listeners want to check out Frightmare Theater Podcast, where can they find it?
Well, we are available on every single major podcast application out there. But we also, you can hit us up on our website, which is just frightmaretheater.com. That is the old spelling of theater. R-E, not E-R. Right. But I think that I have it where if you put in E-R, it'll also go to the same.
Yeah, direct same to the right place.
Right. But yeah, frightmaretheater.com. We've got all sorts of groovy things on our website for people to see. We are on Instagram. We have a Facebook and Twitter and everything like that. So yeah, you can hit us up. We love to interact with our fans too. And we've even had a few of our fans do voice work for us on season 2, which is in production right now and will launch in September.
So exciting. At this point, when this episode airs, it'll already be available.
Right.
And do you all want to plug any of your own personal social media, any other gigs you all are working on, anything like that?
Andy, you got anything going on, man?
No.
Well, if anybody wants to find out more about my work, or, you know, special effects work or acting work, they can go to nathanshelton.com. There's links that link it to, Frightmare Theater as well. But, information about Arcane as a production company and, you know, always looking for new artistic, projects. So I love to collaborate with fellow, enthusiasts of the dark and macabre. So yeah.
So great. Well, thank you so much again. And we definitely, listeners, check out Frightmare Theater Podcast. It's a great one.
Thanks for having us.
Great. And that's all for today's episode.
If you have any questions or comments, you can email us at sitstilllookopinionated@gmail.com. And make sure to follow us on social media at sitstillpodcast. Please subscribe, rate, and review on Apple Podcasts. This podcast was produced by Michael Dritto and me, Claire Malky, and written by me, Claire Malky, Michael Dritto, Fee Bosanyavichs, Gabriel Skavor, Molly Smith, and Charlie Bain. Theme music by Terrence Jackson. Transition music by Christina Walter. And royalty-free music from Epidemic Sound. Check out our referral link in the show notes. If you would like to support this podcast, please subscribe to our newsletter at www.sitstillpodcast.com and visit our Patreon page at patreon.com/sitstillpodcast. This podcast was recorded on the land of the Kickapoo, Peoria, and Potawatomi Nations. And of course, I'm your host, Claire Malky. Oh, and don't forget, stay opinionated. Bye.
Happy Halloween, everybody.
Happy Halloween.
Yeah, do it just like the old Charlie Brown cartoons. Happy Halloween, everybody. Bye-bye.
Well, I'm sorry I even said anything.